Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Premier Football Podcast with me, Hyrule here. And we've got the full crew with me today. I've got Ewan. Hey Ewan.
Hey guys.
I've got Hatta. Hey Hatta.
Hello there. Hello.
And coming back after a hiatus of 2 weeks is Cal. Hey Cal.
Yeah, sorry. Hey man, welcome back. Good to be back. You know, had a long conversation with the Chelsea board and we're deciding what to do next. But I'm back.
I guess you guys, you're still in talks over there, so we shan't go too much into it. A lot of need to know basis, I'm guessing.
No comments.
I'm going to kick things off with week two of the Singapore Premier League, and it's been a pretty exciting first 2 weeks. The club at heart, Tanjung Pagar, top of the league. So let's start things off. I understand that you were in Tampines Hub for game on Friday against the one between Geylang and Lion City Sailors, right?
Yeah.
So what's your take on that game and maybe how the league's been going to you for the past 2 weeks?
Oof. I mean, the league started off really well, right, with Lion City Sailors and, they got the victory and all of that going on for them. And Tanjung Pagar being the surprise. I think they're just going to be Albirex's banana skin for the longest time, by the looks of it. You know, getting that result against Albirex. And then you look into the game with Geylang and Lion City Sailors. Everybody and their dog had Lion City Sailors to kind of go through the Geylang squad. But I think what I saw, I think besides obviously the victory, but I think Hatta, you can help in as well. I think the spirit, the team spirit of Geylang United, you know, from the fans down to the bench, down to the squad, it kind of resonated as in one unison against the Lion City Sailors fans who have their hardcore fans, but it was a different feel with that. And that kind of resonated on the pitch. And I think every call, every tackle, every ball that they won, the Geylang bench were in unison. It was like five guys would stand up and move in the same direction, pointing at the same thing, and move back in the same. It's like a very choreographed boy band.
Chaos. It was chaos on the bench.
It was super chaos. But just the fact that the Geylang fans are really, really loud and they will say whatever they want. And that kind of helped on the pitch as well because, yeah, it was a beautiful strike. Like no one saw that coming. And it kind of stunned the Lions, the Sailors. But the city and the Sailors had a few good chances, I would say, a few good moments, but it's just one of the days, right, when the ball doesn't bounce for you and it's all for Geylang. But it's nice to see the Geylang fan base take that victory and, you know, hope and actually been very vocal on social media on what that victory means to them, beating Lion City Sailors, since Geylang is one of the OGs of the league. So to me, it's been a whole awesome start for the league. Like, it's no one have thought Tanjung Pagar top of the table after 2 weeks, right? So yeah, it's so far so good. Hatta?
Yeah, Hatta, you were in the thick of the Geylang fans, right? On match day. How were the fans on that day?
Last season, Cal and I actually visited this game last season. And I think, you know, that the Geylang fans were a bit muted. I mean, towards the end of season, I don't think they had the best season. Now, I think they're all in full cheer. It was the first game of the season. It was pretty happening. I was surprised. You know, they were really full cheer and they were really pushing, you know, the Lion City Sailors fans for their loud voices. Something that happened as well. I think it got a little bit overheated. I think we were talking about the chaos on the bench and how, you know, all the coaches were so heated that I think the referees had to ask all of them to sit down, that the fourth official. I think that energy spilled over to the fans because I think at some point, I think there was one moment towards the end of the game, I think like 70, 80 minutes in, and I think Lion City Sailors lumped in with a really bad tackle on one of their players. It was really bad, almost two-footed. And tempers flared up in the fan side. So some fans, so on the left-hand side was the Geylang fans, middle is the VIP section. Again, it's just separated by a piece of tape, by the way, down that stairwell, right? And then on the other side, on the right-hand side, was Lion City Sailors. So there's a few of these guys who just ran across the VIP section, chucked along, and the security did, you know, security was a bit slow, to be fair. to stop these guys. They just ran all the way to the other side, to the Lion City Sailors side, and they were trying to pick a fight with the Lion City Sailors players. I think quite a few of the heads of the fan club, I think, stepped in to pull up these guys back, but they were really antagonizing the Lion City Sailors fans, and wasn't the best sight to see, but at least people are passionate about something, right? I mean, rather than people not really caring about local football, that was quite interesting to see. Those that fight. I wish there weren't any fights, but at least people were feeling something. So that was pretty tasty.
Yeah, and I think Noor Ali could be the most animated coach on the bench.
There's a bit of Pep Guardiola, you know, vibes about him, right? Simeone vibes, right?
Where, Simeone, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of nastiness in him and in his own coaching staff as well, in how they carry themselves. So I thought that was interesting from the coaches, especially the Geylang side. I did feel like Geylang played well in the first half. They were keeping Lion City Sailors at bay. To be fair, I think the Sailors also had some of their top players on the bench who were sitting not too far from me. So I was shocked to see. I think Gabriel Quek is recovering from injury. Noor Adam was maybe also not playing, the left back. They had Shannon Sulaiman sitting. Kim Chin Wook was on the bench. They had Hassan Sunny on the bench, among other players. So it wasn't the full complement of players. But I have to say the first half, props to Geylang, they played quite well. Their number nine, the lead striker, was excellent. I think he was one of the standout players for me. The way he held up the ball, he was very smart in how he moved. But I was also quite disappointed. And then there's a red card as well. But the Sailors, I think that was warranted. I think that was the last man impeding Geylang's player going on course for 1-on-1 with the keeper. That was a red card towards the end of the first half. And what I was really disappointed with was, I was just telling the guys offline, Geylang were playing, the Geylang were one goal up in the second half and one man up, but they were playing like they were one man down. They were lumping the ball and they could just, they had an extra man, you could just hold the ball, but they just couldn't hold the ball. And if Sailors had the full 11 players up there and they brought on the players that they wanted to, I think they would have won the game. They would have turned the tide, I think. I really think so. I mean, even down to 10 men, they had two or three excellent chances. And I think a couple of balls clipped off the line, if not mistaken. So that's how close the margins were, being even one man down. So I hope Geylang moving forward, because they have the talent, right? I hope they could, know how to close out these games a lot better. Yeah.
Now that game was on Friday, and then even I think your youngest son went for a Lion City Sailors training session on the Saturday.
On Sunday.
On a Sunday, Did it dampen the atmosphere during the training session?
No, I think the kids being the kids, they're completely oblivious to this kind of stuff. It's more about, them getting to run around and shoot and score and who's running faster than whom. So didn't dampen the atmosphere because always lots of football going on around us. So, he was just thrilled to be able to be back on the field because, after vaccination and stuff like that. So he had to lay off everything, all physical activity for 2 weeks. So yeah, he was glad to have started his training journey finally.
Now, the other game that on that Sunday was Tanjung Pagar Hougang, and Hatta, you talked about red cards, right? And I don't know, Kel might have something else to say about it, but I think Hougang was robbed. That tackle by the lash out by Rio, I think that deserves a red card. And, if he wasn't on the pitch, it would have been a totally different result altogether.
It was a straight red card because on the replays that I got, right, he actually kicked out. Like, he was on his shoulders. He got up. He did like a donkey kick straight to the guy's chest. And the referee was, and I think Balestier bench got, the Hougang bench got riled up. Everybody got riled up at the stadium. And the referee just gave it as a yellow. That's it.
It's funny that every time there was a bad refereeing decision, right? Because I was seated near the Haugang officials. Every time there was a bad refereeing call, they would always say, "Always you lah, always you." And
I'm sure that ref has had a reputation again. I mean, last year when we watched the Lions City's Sailors against Geylang as well at Jalan Besar, it was that same ref, and he was getting hammered by everybody for his calls or his missed calls as well. But you know, to me, watching it off air, it didn't really look that buzzing for the first 70 minutes or so, but it just became full on floodgates in 15 minutes or so. In the last 15, 20 minutes, it just became madcap goal after goal. And I honestly thought that's it. Tanjung Pagar blew it because Haugang was equalized. And then the second one was just too easy. Like, just walked in and they scored. But, you know, good old Tanjung Pagar.
Yeah, but that was a really good move by Haugang for their second goal. I was really impressed. Actually, I've been really impressed by Haugang the past two games. You know, even though they lost their first game against Lion City Sailors, they still stuck to their guns. You know, they had this dogged, single-minded mentality of wanting to play out from the back. Hatta is almost Arsenal-esque, I have to say. You know, and Tanjung Pagar, for a team that was gunning for the top of the table, they were very cagey from the start. Very, very cagey. I'm not sure whether it was part of the game plan, but, you know, they showed a little lack of ambition.
I mean, Tanjung Pagar's ambition is to survive and not finish bottom there or thereabouts. I think they just wanted to I think they were going for it. Like, you know, where they just hold out till the 80th minute, score that freak goal and take the win and actually walk out the stadium happy. I think that was the game plan by Tanjung Pagar. It seemed to work when they scored one. And then, you know, we thought that's it. Haugang had chances, missed a few. But I think for what it was in the last 20 minutes or so, I wouldn't say it was a fair result. I think Haugang deserved the victory, but you know, once again, Tanjung Pagar, top of the table.
And if you're wondering what happened in the Saturday game, it's basically, you know, normal programming has resumed for Albirex Niigata thrashing Balestier 6-0.
Dude, 6-0 heavy. I saw the highlights and I'm like, that Balestier, I'm not one to blame anybody, but that goalkeeper, my God.
I saw the highlights. Albirex were just casually just stroking it in, you know.
Dude, this is a Balestier with Navas as the coach and all these new players, all the players they brought from different clubs in the league. And I personally thought they're going to be dark horses and doing something, to the point I think their chairman had to put out a message on social media and apologize to the fans for the performance and said hashtag trust the process. But the goalkeeper was poor, mate. It was so poor.
Well, before we move on and talk about this coming week's matches, let's have Jerome from the SG Football Podcast to talk a bit more about his thoughts on the past weekend's matches.
Hey guys, Jerome here from the SG Football Podcast. What a weekend of Singapore Premier League football action. You know, first game of the weekend, Lion City Sailors versus Geylang at Old Tampines Hub. Atmosphere was absolutely rocking and what is a victory for Geylang International. You know, Lion City Sailors have a long way to go before they try and go to the ACL, because they are really looking for trouble if they're going to go to the ACL on this kind of form. As for the second game, Balestier Khalsa, try as they might, could not get one over Albirex. Instead of getting one over Albirex, they got themselves whacked 6-0. So, I mean, a lot of work there for Alpha to do, but given time, I'm sure he'll turn it around for Balestier Khalsa. And so the game we just watched, Tanjung Pagar United versus Haugang United. What a game this was. You know, all the goals were in the second half. Just thought, you know, the biggest controversy, unfortunately, was Rio Nishiguchi culpable of making a red card foul. I think he might have. I think Harold has the same thinking as I do. But what a game it was. You know, Karun Nizam opening the scoring. And then, you know, two quick goals, Nazrul Nazari and Kaji Yamazaki, of all people, getting on the end of a brilliant play by their midfield. And then Shota Nishikawa in the last few minutes, scoring the equalizing goal. All in all, a fantastic weekend in Singapore Premier League football.
Hey, thanks, Jerome. So guys, this coming week, four games. you know, one on Friday, two on Saturday, and one on Sunday. First game on Friday, Hougang against Geylang. This one's at Hougang Stadium. Cal, I think you've got a particular interest in catching this one.
Yeah, because I think the two really attacking teams, you know, and Hougang, I know, getting back the, I think they left that whole the game with Tanjung Pagar with a bad taste in their mouth, and they're a very attacking squad, and we've seen what they can do when they want to go forward. And Geylang as well, yeah, I would agree with Hatta, where it feels very Simeone-esque kind of a team, you know, that kind of vibe from them. So it's going to be a really interesting game. I think these two teams right now, they're pretty level. In many ways, that's going to be interesting as well. But that's one. But I think the one I'm a bit more my eyes on would actually be Balestier and Tanjung Pagar. You know, would Balestier bounce back against Tanjung Pagar, or will it be another L for the Tigers? That's going to be interesting as well.
What's your pick for this weekend, Hatta?
My pick for the weekend. I'm quite keen, and this may be a bit controversial. I'm quite keen to see LCS and Tampines, actually. Again, all eyes are always on LCS. I get it. But I also do want to see how Tampines evolves. You know, they've always got a good coach in them, in Gavin Lee. And let's see how LCS bounces back, and let's see how Tampines pushes them through all the way.
I believe it's Tampines' second match.
Correct, away.
It's only second match of the season, right?
And they're playing away, correct.
Yeah, whereas Lion City Sailors will be their third match already.
Correct.
Yeah. And funny enough, on Saturday, Young Lions will be playing their first game of the season against Albrecht Niigata.
That'll be a really tough one. I was going to plump for that one as well, but I think Albrecht has just got too much for the Young Lions.
Yeah, especially I think most of them are coming back from not really a good showing in the under-23 tournament,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Mm. Ewan, any chance you're going down to watch any of the games this weekend?
I have no idea, but you know, if I did, I'd be interested in watching the Lion City Sailors and Tampines Rovers, but yeah, you know, all likelihood, I'll probably catch it like on streaming or TV or something. You know, it's okay, like, you know, hard to ferry the kids around and then try to catch a match in between. But yeah.
Maybe you can watch it with your younger son, man.
Correct.
That's the team he's playing for.
Yeah, you know, Lion City Sailors, Tampines Rovers is exactly when he has his football training. At 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah, that's really bad timing, man.
It's okay. I can sit in the stands and watch, keep an eye on him, and keep an eye on the result or the stream if I can catch it.
They should hold a mass viewing session, you know, as part of the training.
Yeah, you know, they should. I think it'd be a good way to like introduce the kids, right? To give them a sense of what they are part of, right? Yeah. In terms of rather than just like, okay, I'm gonna just kick the ball around. But one of these days I'm gonna have to bring him to a match, because I know they did enjoy themselves at the Suzuki Cup end of last year. So you know, yeah, why not? This is also a good chance to bring them to a live event, which is kind of rare these days, you know. Yeah.
Cool. That's all for this week's local action. Let's turn our attention to England. And over the weekend, we had the massive Manchester derby. But I guess the final result wasn't as massive as probably the red half of Manchester would have hoped for. Cal's shaking his head. I mean, we all know the scoreline, the final scoreline. 4-1 to Man City. Any of you would like to think that scoreline flattered City? No? Everyone shaking their head.
No chance.
No, man. That was...
They should have scored more.
Yeah. 5-1 maybe, I think, would have been closer.
The funny thing is watching the game, and when Jadon Sancho scored the equaliser, it didn't even look like you know, United believed that they could, you know, get something from the game or were ready to put up a fight.
I think Sancho looked like he was like, okay, I just got a goal, but this is just a goal. It's going to be 3-1 very soon.
Yeah, exactly. Soon, right? Yeah, the look on his face, right? It was so strange. It was like, so like as if he was ready to lose already, but
they just made the mistake of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the red half of Liverpool was of Merseyside was hoping that they could do better, but not the way they're playing.
There's only so much the red half of Manchester can do at this point in time.
Just keep winning, then they'll be fine. Yeah,
you'd rather pin your hopes on bloody Newcastle or something.
Probably.
Well, Liverpool have to play City at home.
Yeah. At Etihad. I know at this rate, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Newcastle takes a European slot, right? instead of Manchester United.
Yeah. No.
Where does Manchester United go from here then? You know, earlier before the game, Rangnick mentioned about, you know, the lack of identity to Manchester United, right? He spoke of how there's identity in Man City, in Liverpool, but that's lacking in Man U. But this is a club that was coached by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for 3 years. And, you know, for them not to have an identity develop after that 3 years, that's very surprising to me.
Yeah. Mikhail? I think identity doesn't come from just the manager or the player. It comes from the top all the way down. When you look at it, if we look at Arsenal, you look at the identity of the club, you look at the owners all the way down to the system, to the youth, to the squad, to basically the squad, to the managers, to the players. And you don't see that at United. I think the chop and change and the lack of direction. Like, what is... Okay, so I saw Fletcher sitting on the bench. What is Fletcher's role? No one knows what their roles are at the club. And then you've got someone like Rangnick who's already here for 6 months. He is, and the funny thing is, I think his job is to assess the squad, if I'm not mistaken. So he's writing reports on each player, their attitudes, their behaviors. And this United squad is the poorest, weakest United squad I've ever seen. Collectively and individuals, yeah, they've got good individuals, but even those individuals are not performing. And I think it just is not a United. I don't know what United DNA is. Still haven't figured that out for the past 5 years. So I don't want to get into that. But I think the club is not, there's a lot of issues internally. On the pitch, it's a mess. It's just 11 players, not a team. It's 11 players playing. And you saw that the difference with City. When City wanted to step up a gear, you look at the box, a ball gets crossed in, 6 City players swarm into the box. United players are 4 defenders. The 2 midfielders are standing outside the box, looking at each other, completely lost. There's no synergy. And also, I think part of the blame has to go to Rangnick as well, because his formation was what formation was that? 4-2-2-2-2?
No, I think he switched to a 4-4-2 for this game.
Yeah, but then you had Pogba and Fernandes playing as strikers. But you had Rashford on the bench, who is a striker, if you want to use him that way. So there's a lot of weirdness and a lot of strange times at United. And the United fans are happy over 5th at the table. But if you look at the reality of it, look at the games you've played, look at the teams below you who have games over you and they could actually overtake you as well. You know, you might not even be in 5th come the next 2-3 weeks. So it's a complete mess of a club. And if the person's going to come on me again and send me another hateful message of how I don't like United, it's just being honest, mate. I'm being 100% honest, okay?
We've seen Arsenal do a massive turnaround from bottom of the table at the start of the season to now 4th, prime position to get the Champions League position. What does it take for United, you think, to do the same? I know it may be too late for this season, but can they do a turnaround next season?
No. No, because I think it takes... I mean, for Arsenal to get to this point, they also had about 2 years of upheaval, right? Organizational upheaval since Arsene Wenger left. And even Gazidis and Raul Sanyehi and Unai Emery. And you know, organizational change is never easy. I mean, we all work in companies. You know, we work in corporations. And, you know, organizational change isn't always easy and sometimes they're quite painful, and sometimes you kind of do make mistakes when you're trying to find out new structures. The challenge to United is that they've not even begun to reform their organization on a very big level. I think that's the big problem. They had Sir Alex Ferguson, the same way Arsenal had Arsene Wenger, and they all look at this one-man messiah, right? This one man who could do everything. And then once they're gone, they realize actually these men were very unique men who were kind of stitching and holding the organization through their very large and very able hands. But, you know, very modern teams and organizations require, you know, better structures. Look at Man City. They have a lot of money, just as much, if not more, than United, yes. But they are so well run, right? They have a CEO who knows what to do. They have a director of football who structures the whole team well, and they have a plan throughout. I think the corporate structure, for lack of a better word, at United is not there. And at best, they're going to have Rangnick, who's going to consult and advise them on what that structure could look like. But he's also not going to guy. I don't think he's going to be the guy who implements that structure as well. He's just going to give his advice, for lack of a better word. He has his 6 months to assess. It's still going to be quite topsy-turvy. I think for this season, they needed a manager who could look at the ingredients that he has in the team and make the best out of it. I think that's what they needed, just to tie to the end of the season. Rangnick is not that guy. He is that upper management guy that you should have hired, right? And he is Mr. 5-10-year plan. So he's trying to implement a 5-10-year plan in a few months, which in his team, which is not possible. So I think he's the wrong fit for him. He's the wrong fit for the club because they're not putting him in the right position. He should be taking that director CEO level, right? Or whatever you want to call it. And they need to find someone else who doesn't have so much of a philosophy as a guy who could make the best of a poor situation. You know, when we look at different leaders and different CEOs out there, there are different types of CEOs with different strengths, right? Some are very good peacetime CEO, right? So when things are going very well, they're good at making sure that things run well. Some are very good at firefighting and making sure that they fix issues, right? I think they got a very good leader, but for the wrong situation at United. And they're putting him in the wrong position as well. So I think it would be a struggle. I think, Hyrule, I recall the first day of the season, we talked about who we think will struggle, and both of us agreed that United will struggle. I still think they might struggle next season. I think what they need next season is a manager who does the best with what he has while allowing, you know, the higher-ups to start developing a plan. I think that's what they need. That's what they don't have right now, and they're going to continue struggling, I think. I think next season they're really going to get started on their rebuild, and also I think they're going to be losing quite a lot of players very, very soon, so perhaps this is a good time to do a rebuild. But they need someone with a plan. They need they want to get Rangnick in. I think they have a head of football right now, right? Something,
yes, Martel, they do.
Right?
Martel. Yeah.
So I couldn't get his first name, but maybe he could be the guy who turns it around, but these things take time. As you can see at Arsenal, right? I take them now. I think it's been three to 4 years since Arsene left, and they had to go through some really, really bad times with the wrong appointments as well, and learn from those appointments as well. So I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing, but the faster they pick out a leader who says, this is what we do, the faster they can get on board, because they have amazing resources, right? They're a resource unlike any other. So maybe that could be something that helps quicken the pace of their growth. But if anything, they need Murtaugh to come in and I don't even know whether he's the right guy, right? But the faster they have a leader who decides on everything, the better it will be. I think it'll be a struggle towards the end of the season for United. I'm sorry, United fans. Purely because they got the wrong leader to they got a very smart guy, but he's not the right guy for this project. They need an Allegri, Ancelotti type, or Benitez type. I mean, I know Benitez is not popular in those areas, but they need that type who comes in and say, okay, what do we have? How do we make the best of this for this interim?
Maybe Graham Potter, perhaps.
No one knows what the plan is at United, right? Mm. So it's Graham Potter, is whoever, right? It's Simeone, whoever. You know, no one knows what the right fit is because no one knows what the mold looks like, right? So we all can point and say, oh, it's this guy, it's that guy, but we don't know what that looks like, right?
Yeah, but it's been 9 years since Ferguson's left.
Yeah, but what, that you look at
Arsenal,
was,
the Arsenal side is 4 years, they got something sorted out.
Yeah, but they Arsenal also lost their CEO very early on.
It's besides all of that, but it's on the pitch, the players. You put 11 players on the pitch, players want to go and win, fight for the badge, get the victory, you know, believe in the manager system. United has gone through God knows how many managers.
Yeah, but it starts at the top because they have the same guy. They had what's his name? Ed Woodward, right? So they had Ed Woodward.
They've spent 1.5 billion or whatever the crazy amount is on players, and still, for all that time in 9 years, they're still. I think
yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah,
it's been crazy. And I'm just trying to see that like, you look at the Arsenal perspective. Yes, okay, the guy at the top, but the players that go on the pitch and wear the jersey and represent the club, it's a different thing. Look at Arsenal. Arsenal players believe whatever.
It didn't start. Honestly, the thing with Arsenal, it didn't start until like a year ago where you start seeing progress, because it's been a very dark time also with Unai Emery, where things look lost. In the first year with Arteta, things look quite lost and hazy, and then you know, he's trying to clean things up, but we don't know whether he's capable of doing it. So
still there was one little period of that spark where they won the FA Cup though, so you kind of got a glimpse of what they could do, although after that there was
very scary, still very murky, right? And they had to go through big organizational change, they had to go through big leadership change as well. So
I've got a thought. Maybe the difference here between Arsenal and Man U, right, is the fact that Man U is publicly listed. Arsenal is not publicly listed. Correct me if I'm wrong, Hatta. You know, Arsenal is not publicly listed, right?
No, they're not. But I think the owners in the Glazers are more commercial focused. All the American owners are very commercial focused.
Yeah.
But I think about
but because of that, I think that's why a lot of the decisions from the upper management of Man U, right, have been pandering for the big marquee names, right? They signed Van Gaal, they signed Mourinho, and then they went for the popular vote and signed Solskjaer. All these is to keep the shareholders happy, when in fact that they're not the right appointments for the club.
Exactly. But the difference also, you mentioned you're being publicly listed, the money is flowing in a lot more at United than it is at Arsenal, right? So that's why I think that the owners are not as concerned, right? Arsenal, when the Cronkies took over, you know, it was post-Invincibles. They were moving into the new stadium, fourth place. They were also complacent at the time, but Arsenal doesn't have such deep pockets as United had. So in recent years, you know, finance and the commercial revenue has started to dip. So I think they woke up earlier because, I guess, blessing disguise, the pockets were hit a lot more than United, who has much deeper pockets and stronger commercial pool. I think the Cronkies would have done what the Glazers would have done if the money kept flowing in, I'm very sure. But you're right. I think the public listed and the money plays, that's a big difference, right? So they're still comfortable with the money that they're making. The rot, although the rot is there, it hasn't hit the pockets yet. It would soon be, right? I think once they stop dropping out from the Champions League, you know, they'll start feeling the pinch. And it soon looks like it's heading down that path. But yeah, it hasn't hit them in the pockets yet. So I like Arsenal, where the pockets have been hit quite badly.
Yeah. Even just get your perspective on it, because you're looking at it from a neutral point of view. Where we all support one of the big Premier League clubs as well. Where do you see United going?
Where? Wow. This is
so they play Spurs next, and this Spurs is an emotional Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, actually, I was going to ask Ewan as well. Like, you look at the next four games for Man U, right? They play Spurs, then they play Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, and then Leicester City, and then Everton.
Right.
Right. Is there anything in those four games that, you know, can make a Man U fan happy?
if they come out victorious against Spurs, maybe. But it's, you know, even if they do win all four games, it's going to be a temporary high, temporary fix. I mean, they were on a good run before they got smashed by City anyway. So everyone can see you can see the rot. You know, I think, who was it that was saying, I was watching and one of the pundits was saying, you can see the top teams when they go out, when you watch Man City go out, when you watch Liverpool, Chelsea, even Arsenal recently, you can see them playing their style, their brand, and hence their identity, right, is as such. But for United, they're just all over the place, you know, and back to what Cal said, like 11 individuals trying to play as a team. And even with the great Ronaldo in there, you can't, isn't exciting watching them play anymore, which is quite scary. I think if I were a Man U fan, of course, I'd be shaking my head. But as a neutral, I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm not excited to watch their games anymore. You know, you go down week to week, and you look, okay, who's playing? Oh, Liverpool's playing. Yeah, I can catch that. Chelsea, oh yeah, I want to see how they do. And I want to, of course, you know, maybe I'll flip over for a few minutes and see what they're doing. Oh, Arsenal's playing. Yeah, I'd want to catch that too. You know, and City, of course. But when it comes to United, I'm like, I skip over the match because it's, I might as well be watching, like, you know, almost like paint dry, because, yeah, don't hate me for this, Man U fans, but really, it's so hard to watch United play because it's just hard. I mean, just watch the derby over the weekend, and you're like, that's not even a fight. They didn't even do anything, you know. And basically, City were at their best, or are approaching a point of the season where they should be playing their best, and you could see the gulf in the standard. So where do they go from here? I don't know. Maybe they just have to ride it out and then follow through with their plan, where Rangnick, you know, moves upstairs in another 6 months, and they have to bring in someone that they can believe in and stick with in the long term, like an Arteta, who Arsenal have stuck with him for a while, even Klopp. You know, they stayed with him for like 2 years, or they go for the big name that is successful, but those are not those are usually the big name manager who's on the market, but those are usually not readily available. I mean, Tuchel was the last one, who was at PSG, and it was obviously on the rise, right? Conte was doing well, you know, has always done well, and go for one of the top names, but right now they're all engaged at you know, big clubs, doing well at their clubs. So it's hard for us to see which manager or who they can hire to take them forward. But it's tough because they do have good players. I mean, I maintain and always maintained that they have a good squad, but can that squad gel? Can they play together? Do they have the right attitude when it comes to the games? That's, of course, highly in doubt and looks unlikely. I mean, just the fact that, you know, Ronaldo over the weekend decided to, he was injured and he was not going to play. He decided to go back to Portugal. And, you know, there's some controversy over that, because, you know, Ronaldo is supremely fit, rarely ever injured. So,
Some say, you know, sun has some healing properties.
yes.
Yes. It's not seed, sun. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, I mean, you know, it isn't like Ronaldo to want to avoid big games, unless there's something going on, right, at the club, where, you know,
we have to understand this is a different Ronaldo from his Juventus, where he wasn't well liked in the dressing room. When it comes to United,
yeah,
like Hyrule said it from the start, I think he said that the thing that actually caused Ole to get sacked was Ronaldo. He couldn't. I mean, they played well against Leeds, right? The start of the season, 5-0, whatever crazy stuff that was. But, and you could see the team he was building. Then you put Ronaldo into the mix, everything just goes,
boom,
you know. And you have to sacrifice young players as well. So,
agreed.
So, you know, there's a whole issue of Maguire, Ronaldo, all that stuff you hear in the media. But, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire. So,
right. And being publicly listed and thinking about your stocks, your value of your stocks and shares, you would go in for Ronaldo when, of course, you know, squad wise, footballing wise, they really didn't need to, because that was not the direction that they were headed at all. They had a very top heavy squad already with all the strikers that they had. They have a senior striker in Cavani. They really didn't need Ronaldo there again. So yeah, you know, it's causing all the instability at the club, if there's any at all. And I don't know, you know, I mean, week in, week out, we have guys like Roy Keane coming out and saying, and this week he says the club needs to clear out, you know, your Gary Neville, Phil Neville, they'll come in and they'll criticize, you know, the current squad. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's easy for them, but they were part of like a great United dynasty, you know, when they're at the peak of their powers. So, you know, their opinion is something that I guess is going to be always valued by the fans, and people are going to pay attention. But but this squad, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if clear out is the right way to do it, but yeah, something needs to be done. Maybe, and I hate to say this, maybe Ronaldo does need to go. He needs to, maybe he needs to retire. I don't know. Yeah.
not before the World Cup.
Or not before either. Messi does.
Yeah. Of course, you know, if Italy somehow gets through ahead of Portugal for the World Cup, you might see him retire then.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, let's go one around the table. Next four games for Man U. Man U Spurs. Who's it going to be for you guys?
Oh, man. Spurs 3-2.
Ooh. Spurs are good at counter-attacking, so I think I'm going to go with Spurs 2-1. Yeah.
I'm going to go United. You know, this is a typical United.
Yeah, I expected Cal to say that, you know, Spurs being Spursy, you know, after winning at Everton 4-0. Okay, next game. Man U, Atletico Madrid. I think it's 1-1 from the first leg. This time it's at Old Trafford. No away goals rule.
I'm going to say 2-0 to Atletico.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Atletico winning it like 1-0 or something. Like really scrappy. And
yeah, I might agree with Cal. Yeah,
but getting everything wrong. Being too smart.
2-1.
Mission
again.
2-1.
Or, yeah.
2-1. I think 2-1 Atletico. 2-1 Atletico.
The next game for Man U is against Leicester at Old Trafford. They've been very lucky, 3 straight games at Old Trafford.
Yeah, this one I will say perhaps a high-scoring affair, maybe like a 4-3 or 4-2 to United. Give United fans some hope.
Hmm.
I think they get a better Leicester. I mean, but Leicester is starting to pick up form. So I'm still, you know, this is going to be United where they get the result against Leicester, and then they will lose the next one against Everton. It's just just the way it is for them.
I think Leicester will lose this one. I think United have the firepower to blow Leicester away. And yeah, I think Leicester can. I think Leicester will lose it. Yeah. So United over Leicester, maybe 2-0.
Mm.
Yeah.
And fourth game is Everton Man U at Goodison Park.
And I'm going to say 2-1 to Everton. The funny thing is that I chose 3 wins out of 4 for United, but at the end of it, everyone's still going to be unhappy with United.
It's like, man, I don't know, like one step forward. Yeah.
One step forward, 5 steps back.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, Kel.
I don't know, man. Look at Everton's performance last night against Spurs. Was, oof.
But know, they haven't done too badly at home though. Under Lampard.
I mean, if they get the results one or two games before the United game, that creates a buzz to go into with some confidence. But the team last night, I don't know what Lampard is thinking. Firstly, Lampard is a manager that's liked by the English fan and the English media because he's English and what he's done at club and country level. But man, the tactics were so wrong from the start against Conte Spurs. And just all over, I think it's just been a very evident performance. But I don't know. I don't see them winning. I don't see Everton beating United if they're going to play the same way they play against Spurs.
I you know, it is 1 month away and things can change really quickly, you know, within a month's time.
Agreed.
And that's an extra month.
Said the United fan 9 years ago.
you know, a month could I mean, a month's a long time for Lampard to kind of implement some improvements and changes within the team. Or United could be, you know, could have won Atletico and they go on upward trend and all that. A month is quite some ways to go, but I think purely on talent alone, I think United will go through and they will, I think they'll beat Everton just purely on talent alone.
So on that note, let's talk about the blue half of Liverpool, of Merseyside and Everton. They basically, you know, collapsed against Spurs last night. Is Everton too good to be relegated? You know, everyone's shaking their heads now.
The table doesn't lie, right? That's what they always say.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Hatta mentioned as well. He's saying other teams that were good have been relegated as well.
Yep.
Blackburn, how awesome was Blackburn?
Yes. No, so that's what I'm going to say. That's my point, right? You can be too good to go down, but if you don't want it enough, with the teams around you, you're just going to go down anyway, you know, and then you're going to be stuck and you can't get back up again. So, yeah, it's down to whether Frank Lampard can light that fire under their asses and really get them to, you know, wake up and realize that, hey, you guys are Everton Football Club. You've never been relegated. You shouldn't even be in this dogfight. We should be fighting on the upper end of the table, not the bottom. You know, I'm sure he's told them all this, but yeah, you just look at the, you know, just player wise, right? Individual talent. I mean, Yari Mina, all these, Seamus Coleman, Mason Holgate. You got guys like Dele. Okay, Dele Alli's in there, but you know, he's not been playing well. You got Fabian Delph, who's won, you know, trophies with titles with Man City. You've got Richarlison, you know, Iwobi. All these, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I mean, but they're all just really not performing at all, underperformed, right? And just been played off the park and won too many games this season. You could put it down to Benitez and him, you know, not really being able to get them together. But then again, under Frank Lampard, they beat, what, Leeds? And then after that, they lost to Southampton and to, of course, City. And then, you know, and then now to Spurs, they get smashed 5-0. Yeah, I mean, the only saving grace, I think, is that they're playing Wolves, who are kind of mid-table. Newcastle is probably the only dangerous one because Newcastle still needs to win and they're in good form. Outside of the top four, they're the only ones that are undefeated in the last five. You've got Crystal Palace, also mid-table. West Ham, who might be wanting to push.
They got Watford as well.
Yeah, and Watford, but that's postponed. Yeah, but okay. But, you know, that's still... Watford is also dangerous because, you know, Watford is down towards the bottom end. So, I mean, if they can't motivate themselves, then they're too good to go down, but they're going to go down. Because, you know, if you look around you, all these other teams that are not good enough to stay up, if they want it more, they're going to stay up. I mean, I'm looking at the likes of, you know, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about Brentford. We're talking about Newcastle United, right? But they've shown that they want it, and you know, they'll scrap for the win, and they've got managers experienced enough with tactically, and have you know, been with many sides before, so they know this stuff. So the worry here is that Frank Lampard is technically still a new manager, right? He's had experience with Chelsea and then now Everton. Does he know enough? Can he do enough to get the players to play together? I'm hoping he can, because I'm a big Lampard fan as well. I mean, during his playing days, you know, what he did for England also. But it just hurts to see hurts to see Everton doing as badly as they are doing right now. I don't know. They just gotta dig their heels in. The only saving grace also is that the competition they have up ahead in front of them are not the top sides, and also that they have 1 to 2 games in hand over their rivals around them, so they need to win these games and they need to they just need to stabilize and just do as well as the teams around them after that, and then they'll be safe. But
And even that's a good point, because they have to pick up points against the teams coming up against, because if you look at the last four fixtures, they got Liverpool and then Chelsea back to back.
Yep.
Week 34, week 35, where Liverpool or Chelsea actually sends them to relegation, which is a very cruel twist of fate. Then they end up with
us. Yeah, right.
So, oh my God. So you know, you they have to pick up points, but it's just, I mean, besides the part of the points and stuff, but there's the performance last night against Spurs.
Yeah.
It was really, really easy. And I'm only is Lampard tactically like versed or well versed? Yeah.
Well versed enough.
Take on the likes, you know, change his formation, change the thing. Because,
I mean, up against Spurs, he was up against a master, right? Against Antonio Conte himself, right?
Correct. And, yeah, but if you look at his time with Chelsea, he considered a lot of goals as well, because he liked to just go forward but not focus on the defense. And in relegation battles, your defense has to be tight from the start, right? So
exactly.
I don't know, man, what's it going to look like. Do you think that Everton actually hired Lampard in fact that he has experience in the Championship? Maybe if they get relegated, it's a safety, quote unquote.
No, I don't think they were planning for Championship. With the investment that they had,
new stadium, the investment. Yeah
they were looking at.
They cannot afford to be in Championship, right? Mm. So they're banking on star power again. Another team with really poor business decisions, Everton. And I think he was the wrong appointment. I don't think he has the experience, the technical experience. I've been better off getting someone like Graham Potter, right? But that's another team which has similar issues as United has. All the stuff that we said about United, about having a setup which is neither here nor there, I think you can say the same for Everton. And I think Lampard's appointment is quite representative of that. I don't think he's the right guy. He does have a lot of talent though in the team, but it doesn't look too good for him right now and Everton. Yeah. But if they get relegated, you know, Arsenal can finally buy Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's been on the radar for a while, so maybe that's a blessing in disguise.
Thank goodness.
I get top 4 already want to buy players. 2 months ago, quietly, just a lot of fit now, 7-8. Oh my God.
But it is troubling for Everton, especially, you know, with the, you know, recent financial woes that they're having, you know, because of, you know, the just discovered money that they've been getting from Ushmanov and where that money has been discovered to be coming from, right? And with all the issues that's coming because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's gonna have serious repercussions for them if they get relegated. I don't know. I mean, do you guys think the players at Everton think they are too good to be relegated and don't and are not seeing the reality as it is? Cal?
Well, I don't know. I think you have to look at the table to be realistic in the sense where they stand. But performance-wise, still missing all over the park. And it's not a bad squad. Everton do have a pretty good base. And, you know, of course, Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison, Gray, you've got Allen as well. Doucouré is out injured as well. So it's a pretty strong squad, and Townsend experience as well in the squad. I just think defensively, they're all over the place. Like Michael Keane, it's just all over the park. And Pickford as well has his moments where he's fantastic. And then he can just, you know, do the unnecessary fumble and things happen with Everton that we've seen. So it's that, like I said, to me, it's, I think if you're going to survive the relegation battle, get your defense sorted out first. You can get the odd corner for, you know, set piece, goal, that kind of stuff. And Nick goes in. It's just that they don't sort that out. And Lampard has never sorted out a defense very well. From his time at Derby, he always like to put in attacking players and go for it on that front. But the positive of it is if the youth, their youth development and their youth squad, Lampard will be leveraging on more younger players to come in, and they could be hungrier to press and push for the result. But like I said, the table doesn't lie. If you know, you can't do anything. You are where you are. And as much as fans will blame Benitez as well, for the predicament he left them in, it's also something Lampard has to fix. And I don't see that happening soon unless he gets his defense sorted out.
Hatta, you talked about problems from the top earlier, right? Anything that needs to change at Everton at the top level?
Where do we begin? Do we have another 5 hours of this podcast? I think Moshiri, the owner, has to take a step back and get a CEO to run it, because he's been, I mean, people sometimes pointed at their technical director Marcel Brand, sometimes calling him that saying that he was at fault. You know, Benitez was the other guy at fault. Problem is that there is no proper authority except for Moshiri, who has a very trigger happy approach to forming a team and business decisions. Marcel Brands, I don't know whether he was good or not. He made some good decisions. He made some really bad ones. But he was undermined very often as well. So there's no leadership. I think the one person who has to take a step back is actually the owner, and probably get a CEO or an actual leader to kind of sort out their organization again, because they're also a mess. They're a massive mess right now. And they're now putting all their eggs into the Frank Lampard basket, which is, from the outside looking in, it's not the smartest thing to do.
Ewan, any silver lining for Everton fans, you think?
They get to play Blackburn if they get relegated next season. So that's assuming Blackburn doesn't get promoted. Yeah. I was just having this discussion with my cousin, who's a huge Everton fan, has been a huge Everton fan. And that's what I said to, you know, you get to play Blackburn next season, you know. And then she's like, you know, Everton will show how you play correct football, how you play correctly in that division. I'm like, yeah, that's assuming Blackburn will get promoted. But chances are, you know, it's not likely, because Rovers, really bad form, you know, just all over the place as well. The top scorer, Brereton Diaz, is out injured. And there's like a big fight over with Chile over his, you know, his availability for international football. If he's fit, he's going to go over and play with Chile. If he's not fit, he's not fit anyway and start playing. So, and we can't find a goal to save our lives. So it's tough. And you know, all of a sudden, Huddersfield is now second place in the table. And Fulham, you know, look like they're going to get promoted. They're going to win the league. I mean, it's silver lining for Everton really is that you get to play 46 matches next season if you get relegated in the league. Yep.
That's not really silver lining, but I guess you have to take whatever comes your way at this point.
Yep.
Okay, guys. It's been quite a show this week, but before we go, any last words from you guys? Let's go around the table. Cal?
No, man. I mean, look forward to this week's games. You know, we've got games on Friday as well, in the Premier League, Friday, Saturday, Sunday as well. I think there's some game, Chelsea and Norwich. Just hoping that Hatta's Arsenal doesn't get the victories and become third, and then we'll never hear the end of it if Hatta finishes above Chelsea. Seems so. I mean, that's it. But looking forward to good games in the SPL and the Premier League as well.
Any rebuttal from you, Hatta?
I think we should rename the title to this podcast, Poor Leadership, because we were just talking about lots of teams, you know, lots of clubs, lots of organizations who have really, really poor leadership, namely United and Everton. So, it's pretty interesting to talk about, you know, teams just struggling and poor leadership. But that's that for me. I go to bed tonight thinking about the poor leaders that are populating around the English Premier League.
And Ewan?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say that the top of the English Premier League table has a nice familiar look about it. Will be good. I mean, it's good for neutrals like myself without a dog in the race, because you know, that's what I want to see, right? The top teams taking their rightful spots on the table. And I'm really, really actually glad the likes of Arsenal is back there. Unfortunate about the United situation, because, you know, it'd be good to see them firing on all cylinders. Spurs are making a fist of it. So so yeah, it looks like it's gearing up to be another great end of the season. Just looking forward to, you know, the drama that's definitely going to happen, the twists and turns of the weekend.
Right. That's all for this week's podcast. We'll speak to you guys again next week with more talk on local and international football as well. So until next week, that's me signing off. Ciao, guys.
See ya.
See ya, guys.
Bye-bye.